From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. Hey, everybody. I'm your host, UCB Comedy Creative Director Nate Russell. Thank you so much for tuning in for another cool conversation with a cool comedy filmmaker. And we are really excited about today's episode. This is an episode I recorded a few months back on a trip to Los Angeles out of our brand new podcasting facility on Sunset in L.A., and it was with a guy who you may recognize if you are a longtime listener of this podcast, Joel Jensen, longtime member of the UCB LA community, both as an improviser and as a filmmaker, and somebody who has actually appeared on this podcast almost a year ago, I believe. We did a panel discussion in the UCB Sunset Inner Sanctum Cafe stage, where the entirety of Denizen, a branded content company, talked about their work. It's a really interesting subject, and we wanted to dig in a little more deeply with Joel on his work, both as a filmmaker for brands and also in a non-branded space as well. For those of you who didn't listen to that podcast, here's the summary. Joel Jensen, filmmaker, writer, director, owns a company called Denizen with a couple of partners, and they do both branded content and non-branded comedy content for the internet. And what Joel has really, what Joel does that I think is super fun and unique is that he brings super cool content to brands and executes it really well. Those of you may have seen probably the most high profile piece that's come from Denizen is something called Tiny Hamsters Eating Tiny Burritos. It like broke the internet, over a year ago. The internet's still recovering since then. But it's a piece of content that they actually had pitched out to a brand, and we talk about this, and the brand rejected it, and they were like, this is so cool, let's make it ourselves. And that's kind of the whole ethos of Denizen and of Joel's work. So I wanted to talk to him. What is it like to work in that branded space, but also to bring cool creative ideas into that space and to find ways to get those ideas made? Because I think a lot of times it's a little bit more of a negotiation, but Joel seems to be able to have both the credentials and the confidence and the creativity to bring great ideas to life that brands are associated with and do it in a way that feels mutually beneficial for him as a creative and for the objectives of the brand and the ad agency and the campaign. So it's a really interesting way to work inside the digital space, something I learned a lot about in this conversation. I hope you will too. Here's our conversation with Joel Jensen. Well, Joel, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I guess I just want to start by just sort of like maybe getting a sense, because you're both a performer at the theater and also have an experience with like the old beta team system here, but not as a participant, as a coach.
Right.
And work in film and filmmaking outside of UCB as well. So I guess, how do you sort of like define yourself and your career? Like, when people say, what do you do? How do you answer that?
Sure, that's a hard question.
Yeah,
and usually it takes me a lot longer to explain what I think I am.
Yeah,
I think at this point, I just like to consider myself like a creator or a person who makes things.
Mm-hmm.
I work in a creative capacity in film. I direct and co-direct videos that we make, produce and executive produce things that we make.
Yeah,
and perform at the theater.
Uh-huh.
And I think probably the just like best shorthand is just a person who makes things.
Sure.
But then there's also like subsets within that.
Yeah.
Like what I just mentioned, and I own the company that I work for. So there's also like considerations of all that, and that all informs my perspective, and I think makes it difficult to define myself as like one thing, even though I would love to, because it sounds cool to call yourself a director or a writer.
Sure.
But I think in today's world too, like those delineations are much, much more vague.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool, I think, and a good thing.
Yeah. That all makes sense. And I think this is always the time of year where you have to think about how you define yourself too. Because it's like you're going to go home and see family at the holidays. And you're like, what do you do exactly?
Yeah.
On the spectrum of filmmaking, where do you feel like your sort of like strengths or biggest interests lie? Is it on the sort of like writing side?
Yeah, I think it falls probably in the writing and directing portion of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like sitting with ideas, finding ways to crack ideas open and make them as presented as strong as possibly.
And do you
Do you shoot?
Like, as in, like, yeah, DP like, or anything?
Yeah, anything like that.
No, I'm terrible at that kind of thing.
So that's not the aspect. And were you ever an editor or producer or anything like that?
I mean, I taught myself how to edit, like, very basically on Final Cut and Premiere, mostly out of, like, necessity.
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, when we make, like, Tiny Hamster videos and stuff like that, we cut them ourselves. Yeah, like, the technical side is probably where I could learn a ton more than I know now.
Sure.
I would like to. But yeah, I think it's more of like the concepting portion is where I, at least for now, is where I think my strengths, or at least most of my experience is.
I think that's really interesting because you have some conversations with some people in this business and it's very much like there's an old school mentality. It's like, I am this, right? And it's interesting you're saying like, yeah, I could learn more about this and it would benefit me.
Yeah.
We definitely like are entering a phase of this business that is about being able to play a lot of different roles in order to like just get something done.
Yeah.
You know? So like with the work that you're doing right now, like how big are your teams generally?
Sure. So it really depends on the job.
Sure.
But like if we're doing an independent piece, like a Tiny Hamster video for our channel, like we keep it very, very streamlined. Where we'll have like a small crew, maybe like 7 people. Yeah. We'll have like a DP, a camera op / grip, a producer, art director, and like a couple PAs.
Yeah.
When we do like big branded jobs, like we'll do things for Pepsi or Qualcomm or something like that. We'll we can have much larger crews of like, you know, 30 people.
Yeah.
So it really, really depends on what the concept is asking for and what the budget is.
Sure.
Which oftentimes are two very different things.
Where's the place where you find the most joy? Is it in the smaller team stuff or do you like the sort of like bigger logistical?
Well, I think for me personally, I'm like very much a chicken shit coward. So it's easier to work with small crews.
Okay.
Like there's a little less going on.
It's more intimate.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's a much better way to put it.
You like personal connection.
But there's like fewer moving parts, obviously, so it's easier to manage.
Yeah.
But like working with big crews is really fun because you like simply sitting in the scale of something and being a part of it. And it, like when we're directing it or like sitting in with producers and things and feeling like we're steering that big ship is really, really cool and really fun. And the feeling of support that you have when you work with like big crews full of very talented people who know exactly what they're doing.
Sure.
Makes your job so much easier.
Yeah.
And it's so like either way brings its own pluses and minuses with like stress or artistic satisfaction or just like the cool feeling of working with somebody who's a very, very good at like lighting a space.
Yeah.
Is like an incredibly cool and interesting experience that you can only get when you're working with like oftentimes when you're working with larger crews or something like a larger job.
Sure. And money also doesn't hurt in making sure that you're getting somebody who's excellent at that specific skill.
The flip side, though, is like stakes are like commiserate with budget.
Right.
So, and I think maybe particularly since like we own the production company that we're running, it gets extra scary sometimes when like expectations are much higher based on a budget, which is partially why we started making our own like micro budget stuff was just to like be able to have a creative experience, work with people, bring ideas to life without any added pressure of like a client or a return on investment and like those sorts of things.
Cool. As I was sort of like doing a little sort of like background, like history on you, sort of like seeing how like the success that you've had, I want to sort of like get to Denizen as quickly as possible.
Cool. Yeah.
I think that's where the most interesting is. But just sort of like lay out the timeline of your sort of like trajectory to there. So you graduated in 07 in Iowa.
Oh yeah. You really did do some research.
And did you go to London straight from there?
So I went to University of Iowa and then I studied abroad in Belfast for a semester there. And then when I graduated in 2007, I had an English degree and that was about it.
Yeah.
And didn't really know what I wanted to do. I wanted to do something creative.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
And I had some friends who one of my friends grew up in Los Angeles, and so a group of us, we just moved out here.
You moved out here then?
Okay. Yeah. And my, like, first real job, like, I started working at, like, you know, a tea cafe or whatever and got fired. And my first real job was at this company called The Viral Factory.
Uh-huh.
And they were basically, they were based in London.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they had opened up, like, a satellite office in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And those guys basically were kind of like the pioneers of what we now call viral advertising.
Sure.
Or maybe even now call, like, branded content.
Sure.
So they were, like, this was before YouTube, and they were seeing, like, sites like Ebombs World, or, like, people, like, attaching video files to emails and sending them around. So, yeah. Like, this was, like, the beginning of video as, like, a quote-unquote viral medium.
Sure.
And they said to themselves, like, oh, okay, like, people are sharing this. That creates a distribution system very similar to, like, how we could look at broadcast, right? But
sure.
We cut out all these middlemen of networks and media companies and stuff. If we just make content that people want to share,
mm-hmm.
we just the two of us, we can be like scrappy contenders against these giant, like the giant media,
yeah.
Industrial complex or whatever.
So very quickly, and at sort of like a formative time in that process, you're sort of like on the ground with people,
yeah.
who are trying to like crack that.
Yeah. And so they had like had some success doing that. They'd made some like really brilliant work. And then I kind of stumbled into it,
yeah.
as an intern, like spell checking emails.
That's great.
Yeah. And the cool thing was it was very small, and it was like a really anarchic company on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the advantage of getting to like pitch ideas on day one and like sit in a room with people who really knew what they were doing and learn from their process.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked there for a couple of years and ended up, me and two other people were like running the US office for like a year.
Yeah.
And then the recession happened and we got laid off more or less. And the three of us then decided to start Denizen.
Cool.
And essentially just do more or less what we were doing there,
mm-hmm.
just do it on our own. And we got really lucky that we had some clients who really liked working with us from those days who wanted to continue working with us.
Yeah.
So they did, and we've been plugging along for like 5 years.
That's great. You've really had a career that is very much, it's pretty much exclusively in the digital space. Have you ever done jobs that are for film or television in a traditional sense?
No. Just purely doing like these sorts of short form pieces,
yeah.
of content. Yeah.
So you break off, you start your own company.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like the tenets that you're trying to bring to it, how much did you guys sort of like define yourselves as you're like getting out of the gate? Did you define the type of work you were interested in doing like specifically or broadly? Or
yeah.
Was that even a consideration?
Yeah. So when we first started, it was very, very specific.
Mm-hmm.
Viral videos.
Viral videos.
Like sponsored viral videos.
Uh-huh.
That we would go to a brand and say, or a brand would come to us and say, hey, we want to make a video. We want it to be shared online.
Mm-hmm.
We Googled Googled viral agencies. You guys came up. And that is basically what everything was based off of.
Yeah.
And largely still is.
Sure.
There's been like, the industry has really evolved in strange ways where like you don't call it viral anymore because the word pretty much got abused.
Yeah.
By like a lot of ad agencies and like snake oil salesmen.
Sure.
And so it kind of tainted the word. But essentially that is all we really focus on, which makes us very, very niche.
Yeah.
And we still are spending a great deal of our time like explaining what that means, justifying its value.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that we really believe in.
Yeah.
Because it's better for everybody. I mean, like if to get on our high horse or something, like advertising doesn't have to be as bad and annoying as it is. It's like, it's just status quo that's dictating that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the noble purpose, I think, behind why we're trying to do this, if there is one, is to try to shift the balance of power or the balance of perception,
yeah.
of what advertising content is or has to be, and prove that it can be done better, like less invasively,
sure.
and more satisfactorily for everybody. So like brands can be happier that people are watching their content, and people can be happier that brands are putting out content they want to watch. And that's the big picture, what the dream of what we could, what we would want to achieve.
Yeah.
It's a very tall order, and who knows if that shift will ever really happen. Uh-huh. But so, yeah, so like it's all built very specifically on like shareable content, what makes things shareable, why that matters.
Yeah.
And that's the also like when we were just a like fledgling new company 5 years ago, and I was like 25.
Yeah.
Going up against like very experienced advertising agencies and things like that. The only edge we had was, look, people will share this.
Yeah.
You'll get a lot of views. You won't have to pay a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
And that was all we had.
I mean, that's a great thing for them to hear. You don't have to pay a lot of money and they'll get a lot of views. Well, that meets both of our objectives.
Yeah, exactly.
So here's where this like leads me in my brain. I definitely like agree with the sentiment that like advertising as it is doesn't have to be as mm-hmm. annoying. But the part where I think that I've had a hard time is how do you make sure that discussion stays there? Because I feel like it's also like risky. Mm-hmm. For an ad agency or a brand to make something that is not a commercial. A commercial is a proven formula. And if nothing else, it has a lot of product mention in it.
Yep.
So how do you, like, as far as like that process goes, how do you inject that idea that the creative is the lead in this and that this sort of brand has to sort of just be next in line mm-hmm. in order to like really make it shareable? How does that communication happen?
That's a really good question, and it's a really hard one to answer.
Yeah.
and it's something that, like, I'm still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
I think maybe the first step is, like, I don't think it's an either or. I don't think that, like, TV ads or banner ads need to go away, mm-hmm. nor do I think that we're really trying to replace them. They serve a purpose, for sure, and mm-hmm. I think it is proven, and so, like, if that part ain't broke, like, we don't need to fix it.
Sure. But you're also not interested in making that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want to make those.
And so, but I think that a lot of times it's like, they would agree. They'd say, well, I don't want you to make that either. But then in the end, like, those pressures of needing it to tick off the sort of, like, data boxes,
right,
drive them to be like, well, let's just put a tag at the end. Let's just insert a little bit more product, you know?
Sure. So, like, man, it's really hard. Like, when you ask me a question, I'm like, I don't know how we got away with a lot of it. But
sure.
A lot of it is like comes from a brand being just interested in the first place in doing online content.
Yeah.
So like then we have a terms where we can say, all right, if you want to do this in the first place, you need to do it right. Here's our recommendation for how we should be doing this.
Yeah.
Here's our justification. Here's our rationale.
Yeah.
It helps us that we have, like, now we have sort of a body of work that proves that our methodology tends to work.
Uh-huh.
But it always is a compromise. And I think a lot of it is, like, the way that we talk to brands about what a concept is, what its purpose is, and how it aligns with their messaging up front
mm-hmm.
is what matters. So, like, a lot of it is, like, saying, this is how we translate your message for this medium.
Sure.
And this is why the way we're doing it works for your brand.
Mm-hmm.
This is why only your brand would be doing it. And I think putting in those terms and like encouraging, like, first and foremost, you do have to loosen it a little bit. A lot of the times what we would say is like, you get to say one thing per video. We're not going to be able to say these three things about products A, B, and C. We need to pick mm-hmm. one thing to say about them.
Yeah.
And once we have that, then we can show, like, this is how it ladders up to everything else you're doing. It's just a piece of the pie. And I think once we start to, like, cast as, like, it is not, like, this lone wolf that's, like, meandering around for fun. It's, like, a fundamental piece of your overall strategy. And like, and be honest about that. Like, not trying to, like, just bullshit people, but like literally do the work on the creative side to make sure that it's a valid and sound piece of content for their overall message.
Yeah.
Then we can start to like agree on our terms of conversation and start to like work things out. Now, it doesn't work every time, and our best work has come with clients who we've worked with for a long time and trust us.
Mm-hmm.
So they give us a little bit more wiggle room or like we get a little bit more weight in those situations.
Sure.
But a lot of it is like, well, I mean, I might go off on a tangent here, but like a lot of it too is like just the concept itself. It's like if the concept is cool and specific,
yeah,
and can ladder up to their brand, and like we can put a call to action and strap line at the end, like tagline or whatever, for sure. Then it puts the burden is on the concept itself. Is that concept strong enough to like shoulder the weight of the brand's needs?
Sure.
And oftentimes it's not. But the ones that when it does work, then we're kind of like chugging along and it tends to be a lot less of a struggle.
Right. And it also has a payoff in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
In that if it is entertainment, if it's entertainment and it's truly entertainment, then what the brand gets out of it has so much more value than a traditional ad.
Right.
And I think that's almost like why they're still attracted to it and why they're dedicated to figuring out how to crack this thing too,
mm-hmm.
is that like when it is successful, there's so much more upside
right.
to that experience
exactly.
for the person watching it, who's who they're trying to reach in the first place.
Yeah, so when we were starting, and a lot of the time, and it still is, again, the battle is like against TV content or TV metrics,
yeah.
or like more traditional metrics like impressions and yada yada. What equipped us to pitch ourselves or pitch our approach and methodology was exactly that, the upside, right? If you make a piece of content that follows these rules, you'll get shares. So mm-hmm. that means that you're getting views you're not paying for. That means that you have the reach of a TV ad without spending a TV's media buy.
Yeah.
So we're saving you money.
Yeah.
For the same impact, if not more, because now we can look at your ratings. We can look at comments.
Yeah.
We can measure sentiment. We have blog posts where like influencers are writing about it and shaping opinion about your brand in a positive way. And so there's this like really deep level of user ownership of the content
sure.
that you'll never get on a passive TV ad.
Yeah.
And that starts to, I think, when we're putting it in those terms, that's when brand folks are willing to say, yeah, okay, let's like start to like explore this
yeah.
and start to take a little bit more of a risk.
Sure.
But it always comes down to, at least in our experiences, it has always come down to like some brave person at a brand, like a brand manager or a marketing director, like kind of sticking their neck out and taking a risk. And then hopefully we really deliver on it mm-hmm. and make them look good. And then it really gets the engine going. But like, it is basically like, once we put into those terms of like, here's what the platform of the internet has to offer you, if only you play by the rules of the platform
right.
rather than a TV ad or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they are very, very different.
This makes me just wonder, as far as like process goes, who, like, I guess it's a, your company is like, you have two partners, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's three of you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys the only, do you have other employees now at this point?
Yeah.
Or you do?
Yeah, we've got two.
Who on your team manages that end of the relationship? Is there
like the account handling?
Yeah. Is there a delineation in that way?
Sort of, more and more there is.
Yeah.
So we just hired, so like when we started, we didn't really believe in titles. We didn't really believe in specific roles, mostly because like we grew up, like our entire work experience didn't have that. So it's like, everybody just needs to figure out how to get this motherfucker done.
Sure.
Whether that means like you need to learn how to edit in Final Cut this week so that you can cut something together, or like you need to hold hands with the client and educate them on how this stuff works,
yeah.
Manage their expectations.
Sure.
So that's how we'd basically been doing it. It's like we would manage our own accounts and stuff mm-hmm. like that, which is great because it also helped us just from a business perspective, like a small business, gave us like personal close relationships with our clients, which
right.
is incredibly helpful and, yeah. and wonderful because a lot of them are very, very smart, great people and interested in doing good work. We just recently hired somebody to like do business development and account management more. So we're kind of passing that off to him. little bit more, because I think he's better suited at it.
Sure.
We're like weird creative people who that's mostly what we want to do.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it, some of the like client handling was square pegs and round holes for us.
Sure. And that's also like out of necessity because yeah. it's your business mm-hmm. and who else is going to do it if you're right. not going to do it. And now you're experiencing growth and you're able to sort of like segment.
Mm-hmm.
How was that experience for you as a square peg round hole? Or I guess like, how did you approach that?
Sure.
As a necessity, but not necessarily something that you feel like you're excelling at, or do you feel like you excel
yeah,
at?
Yeah. You know, it's a really interesting way to frame it. Like when we talk about learning how to edit because you have to,
yeah.
learning how to produce because you have to make the things you want to make. I think it is fair to add like learning how to account handle
mm-hmm.
or learning how to talk to the people that you're selling to and like learning how to foster healthy relationships and open dialogues like is a huge part of it.
Yeah.
And one that I'm glad that I have because, and like was trained like through trial by fire basically. Because like, and this maybe gets into a whole nother conversation, but like when we're talking about evolving and like expanding and getting somewhere, making things, inevitably we come against the person who controls the money.
Sure.
Who oftentimes is presented to us as the like evil vision killer, right? Which is not true. And I think there's just like realities, especially like I can only really speak from like working with brands, but they have realities that on their end too, right?
They like, have a really hard job.
Really hard job.
Yeah.
And working with some loopy creator who like has this vision is something that they have to deal with and probably roll their eyes over, right?
Sure.
Is that ultimately they want to go home and relax and have dinner and not like they care a lot. I think there's just like different priorities and like they have different people to answer to. So like I think it's important to understand that part of it and mm-hmm. like what their objectives are is not because they don't get it or something. It's because they have a job to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by having no other option than like learning how to like have those relationships, it like really has humanized that side of it a lot for me.
Yeah.
Which it never would have if I hadn't. Like, and I think a lot of creators like do live in a creative silo for a long time, and it's easy to forget that like there's so much give and take that needs to happen
mm-hmm.
for something to just get made. And it's like, what matters is that it gets made for me.
Sure.
What matters is that it gets made, period, more than that it gets made exactly to my specifications.
Right.
And that really helped me to learn how to do that, as well as to like understand like where the money is coming from,
yeah.
why that money is coming to me,
yeah.
what the point is and what they want to get out of it. Seeing that the other side of that equation is super duper important, and to like be at peace with that side of the equation too. Like the whole idea of like selling out or doing meaningless work that you don't believe in, like all that stuff for me personally, like when I was like a teenager or younger 20s or whatever, that was a huge problem for me. And when I even started like working in advertising, it was a huge problem for me.
Yeah.
Where I was like, what am I doing? And but like, it is just the reality. And I think as the internet blossoms and gets better and better, like that relationship, especially with brands, like is really going to empower people. And the net gain of what working with brands to like make cool shit
mm-hmm.
is going to be brilliant, even with all of the like millions of little compromises that are going to have to come in along the way. It's still like net a better situation than it was 10 or 20 years ago
yeah.
when like it was such a siloed process for who's making what and why.
Yeah. And you're also sort of like, yeah, and you're bringing that cool shit to them as well
mm-hmm.
as like, this is the starting point of the conversation
mm-hmm.
and what we're interested in making.
Yeah.
And this also, I think, tracks back to what we were saying before about how needing to know, like have a diverse set of skills.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's an interesting like skill that I don't think that a lot of content creators put a lot of value in.
Yeah. I don't think anybody thinks of it. Like I didn't even think of it until now.
Yeah.
that is a tool in the belt.
Yeah. It definitely is. And it's the one that like actually helps get stuff made.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like learning to pitch is one thing. And I think that that's a glamorous thing to learn because it's the pitch, right?
Sure.
But there's so much life in that relationship after the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to be worked at just like any relationship, and learning to not be overly frustrated when bad news comes, or learning when to bend and when to stand firm is another thing. Like learning how to feel those out. It's hard to do it without experience, but like all of those things are important.
Yep.
And it is important. I think if there is anybody who is listening, like the ebb and flow and the give and take of it is so important. Like picking your battles and fighting them when it matters, and truly understanding when a battle matters. Like,
yeah.
What a location is, or like, how something makes or breaks a concept. It like, those are so important to understand, like when you've got the leverage, when you don't, when it's worth it, when it's not, and how that then impacts your relationship in the long haul. Because say you make a compromise now that you don't really want to, but you can't truly, if you're honest with yourself, justify fighting it. A year later, that compromise might give you the leverage to get what you want with that same client or partner or producer later. So like we have to think in those terms. It's really important.
Yeah, and you're saying relationship a lot. Mm-hmm. And even when you're talking about the development of your company, you're talking about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that there's this balance that has to be struck that I think a lot of creative people have a hard time with, which is the balance between the creative project and giving that priority, and also giving the relationships mm-hmm. of the collaborators that you're working with on a project priority as well. And that it's a constant struggle that I think a lot of times I find the creators value more the idea mm-hmm. or like the project than they do the relationship.
Yeah.
In a way that like is just detrimental in that long-term kind of way.
Yeah. Like I think one helpful way to look at it is like the relationship is the medium that a concept lives in.
Yeah.
And or can die in. So, and it like, It starts in the pitch. It starts in like the creative development of the concept. It goes to the shoots themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We were shooting a branded spot that was like a big budget, high stress, and we almost had our AD walk off set because he was upset with the DP, and that would have killed all of the work,
right?
And all of the hard, like difficult, creative stuff that had gone down. And it was like because like even relationships that were like beyond.
Yeah.
Our reach.
Yeah.
Like,
and also why you need to know how to AD. Just come back to that. Also why you need to know how to AD.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that could screw over your whole company.
Yeah, exactly. So, those relationships matter so much. And like, they are how, like, because an idea is just that.
Yeah.
An idea is not a product. An idea is not a process. An idea is not a script. So like, and you rely on those relationships to get every step of the way, whether it's a client or your AD or your mm-hmm. DP or your partner or the bloggers at the end of the day who you're hoping will post this. Like,
sure.
All of that factors in a huge way to like creating a successful piece of work.
Mm-hmm. You guys also do, I saw on your website, you guys also have like a media placement, mm-hmm. media strategy component mm-hmm. to your company. How did that sort of like work into your process, and how does that impact the way that you guys work?
Sure. So I think this is something that's very important for creators.
Yeah.
Like about as important as it gets, which is we call it seeding. And basically what it was like, so for example, when the Viral Factory was first started, identifying like how the distribution works on the internet, which was like sharing blog posts, things like that, right? Rather than like a 30-second clip on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So then my partners really, more than me, developed a methodology for like, how do we distribute content specifically to be shared? Like, because it's so much about context. Content itself is defined by its context. For example, you could see a video posted on your favorite blog with a cool headline, and you're going to click play. That same video could be put on TV, and you're going to DVR through it, right? So, like, context is everything. So, essentially, what we started to develop is, like, reaching out to bloggers to try to get blog posts. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, the core of it. And then, as well as just, like, buying media. So, like, we could, like, guarantee a minimum amount of views just purchasing those.
Sure.
Then, because we're, like, doing outreach, that's where you can, like, earn 5-10 times the total views that you paid for. So, and I think for any creator, what I push really hard, and like when I coached a beta team, this was a huge thing for me too, is like whenever you make something, before you even like start shooting, ask yourself, when this is done, how do I pitch this to a blogger? How am I going to email this out, and how likely, and this is like if you want to be viral. So like if you want to make a festival film, it's a bit of a different thing.
Sure.
or whatever. But like it's all about what would make this blogger post this video. So like what we do is like when I first started and whenever we bring somebody on to our company, what we do when you start is working in seeding. So you'll take videos that we make or videos that people pay us to distribute. Mm-hmm. And your job is to send that around and try to get blog posts. You quickly learn the difference between what's an easy video to send around and what's a hard video to send around. And 10 times out of 10, the easy video is like, you can describe what it is in one sentence or like a headline.
Sure.
The hard ones take like a paragraph to explain or are somehow more complicated. Conceptually, you can't just pitch it in a headline. So like the example is, not to use our own example, but like Tiny Hamster Eating Tiny Burrito was exceedingly easy to send around, right?
Yeah.
Before you even press play, you know what it is.
And you deliver on the concept.
Exactly. So that makes those types of things are very, very easy. And I think that's the key more than like anything, whether you're working with a brand or doing independent content. Can you boil that concept down or that video down into one sentence or one headline? Because mm-hmm. then you're doing the blogger's job for them.
Yeah.
You're getting them their clicks just inherently.
Yeah.
And I think that's the important thing about seeding, which is basically like learning the ins and outs of the platform and learning exactly why a concept is easy to share or not easy to share.
Sure.
So I would encourage everybody, if you're making your stuff, like hold yourself to that question. Is this going to be an easy pitch or a hard pitch?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. The next thing this leads me to is, so you guys have Denizen, and is it Denizen Company? Is that how you refer to yourselves? Your website is denizencompany.com.
Yeah, I mean.
It's just Denizen.
Yeah, basically, great. Yeah.
But you also created Hello Denizen.
Yeah.
And as a sort of like line between the branded work and more purely creative work, how did that come about?
Sure. So, we started Hello Denizen last year.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we had been on a real stretch of, like a real shitty stretch, where we were pitching a lot of ideas that we really liked, but nobody was taking them.
Sure.
So we decided like, well, shit, let's just make our own YouTube channel, get these out of our system, like, and just like make things without all these pressures, without needing approval or like the permission of somebody had a brand to make stuff. Like, that's not why we got into this in the first place. We got into this trap where that's like, we let that overtake everything.
Sure.
So we made it, and we were just going to call it like the Denizen channel or whatever. But one of the ideas was called Bubble Porn, and it was like pretty adult. And so we wanted to have like some sort of like plausible deniability.
Yeah.
So we just put the word hello in front of our name, which wouldn't have worked, but that's the only reason why, really. And so we shot three videos to start with. One of them was Bubble Porn, which we had like tried to pitch around, but was like too risque.
Uh-huh.
And then there was like one where a guy like snaps beer bottle caps really accurately and powerfully. And then the third one was Tiny Hamster Eating Tiny Burritos, which was an idea we had pitched to a frozen burrito company, but they had passed.
Right.
And so what it's kind of become is like, it is really hard. We're still trying to figure out exactly what to do with it. We've been really lucky because like the Tiny Hamster stuff worked really well. And so we've had brands come and like sponsor episodes and things like that now. And that changes the entire dynamic of that relationship too. Mm-hmm. Some like, which has been a very interesting process because our kind of terms for working with that is like, it goes on our channel. We have 100% creative control over it. We have final cut. We'll of course like work with sponsors to like get what they want, make sure that they approve of the script. But like we ultimately decide what the deal is on this.
Mm-hmm.
Some have been pretty cool about that. Some have been struggled more about that. Which is a big shift from like the agency more or less side of what we do, which is like the power is with the brand. Like it's work for hire.
Yeah. And it goes out through their,
yeah, and it goes out through
network.
through their platforms, however they want to do it.
Uh-huh.
And it's a really cool to see the differences on how these on how it works from both of those perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still also like trying to figure out what more new series can we put out? How can we get sponsors on new content? And how can we turn this channel into something that's like its own little business?
Sure.
That's sustainable. Because right now we bootstrap everything and basically pay for it out of pocket, which can be painful sometimes. So we're trying to figure out how we can kind of solve that problem a little bit.
Cool. That's a really interesting way to think about it, too. Did you have an outlet for the branded work before Hello Denizen that was yours, or did it always?
It would always go to their channel.
On their channel.
Yeah.
And this is now a place where it's like your content, but potentially they could be.
Yeah.
Involved with it.
Yeah, we do like product placement or brought to you by.
Right.
Kind of whatever. But since it's on our channel, and it's a really cool deal, like, because you, like, it's such a cool shift for creators, I think, that brands are starting to do this.
Yeah.
Because you get paid to do the work and you retain the upside of the content. So, like, you build your subscribers for every branded video that you do, which makes your channel a better platform for sponsorships, which gets you more sponsorships, which like creates that virtuous cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool. And it's great that that's happening. I think there's a lot of smart people are behind that shift happening. And I think it's really wonderful for everybody.
Cool, man. This is all really interesting. I think I just want to sort of get a sense in here of how UCB factored into like how you also mm-hmm. got involved here, and how does that sort of other side? Because you're also a performer
mm-hmm.
and you do improv. Do you also do sketch or just improv? Do you
not really. I just do Herald Night.
Just Herald Night.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess how does that side of your life factor into your creative outlet?
I think I started at UCB for the same reason that I moved to LA, which was like I just generally wanted to do and make cool stuff.
Yeah.
And learn more about comedy specifically. Yeah. So I started taking classes and whatever. And then through those classes, I met cool people that kept me in classes.
Yeah.
As I like fell in love with it. And I think the way UCB has impacted me has been really interesting and cool because I think it like, it does sort of, impart the DIY attitude on people.
Yeah.
Like that underground feeling. Of like feeling like you're in on something and like putting a premium on having that feeling certainly not only helped, but like helped get me through the obscurity of where we started from, where like nobody believed in us. Nobody gave a shit about what we wanted to do. Nobody gave us the time of day for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think UCB makes you feel cool when that happens, which is great because you can like weather the storm that way a little bit more. And then I think, it's also taught me a great deal about like concepting and writing.
Yeah.
In that, like the idea of game is very, very, helpful when we're thinking about concepts of like that boil down into a headline.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you get noted after a Herald, right? A lot, they're like, what was the game? Or like, what would be the marquee on the marquee above the theater for that? Which is the same thing as saying, what's the headline? And
sure.
I think it helps to like economize concepts in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then thirdly, and it relates back to like working with clients and what relationships are, is the principle of like yes anding. It's very corny to say this, but like that principle makes it so much easier to talk in a room
with
clients or producers or whatever, because in order to convince somebody that you're right, you have to make them feel like it was their idea.
And that you're hearing them.
And you're hearing them, exactly. Yeah. So that idea, like, you can bend conversations however you want if you're just yes-anding and you're, like, collaborating truly with people.
Sure.
And understanding that when you're in that room, like, it's not an antagonistic thing. It's a collaborative process. And if you play by, like, the rules of yes-anding and play by the rules of, like, healthy relationship building, you can oftentimes get what you want. It just takes a little while longer of talking and collaborating, because then we're sharing an idea. It's not just like fighting over it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's been super duper helpful.
That's cool. And at this point, it's also something I assume that it's like just a creative mm-hmm. release as well. In terms
oh, big
of,
time.
You don't have to do any prep for it.
Yeah, no prep, no process.
Just
and
walk in.
No accountability.
Fun. Yeah, exactly. Low stakes.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, of course.
Appreciate it. I mean, I know that we don't really know each other. We just met today, but
yeah.
It's really fascinating and really wonderful also to hear somebody talk about, because I definitely agree with the idea that, like, so much of what that philosophy is impacts, that UCB philosophy impacts the way that you can approach, like,
big time.
The rest of the work.
It's yeah, just, like, gets into your DNA, and yeah. I think it's so constructive.
Yeah.
And so helpful. And so I'm very glad that I've gotten the experience I have here and met the people I've met here and
yeah.
And sort of like drink the Kool-Aid here.
Well, and thanks for doing this.
Great. Thanks for having me, man.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye. And that'll do it for episode 19 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thanks to Joel Jensen for taking the time to talk. Hope you guys learned as much as I did from that conversation. I think that that's a really fun, unique way to work. And I don't know. I'm going to steal a lot of that stuff and use it in my work going forward. And I hope you will too. That's the point of this podcast. If you like our podcast, please subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. We are here to be judged by you. So please rate us, review us, interact with us. You can email us at podcasts@ucbcomedy.com and we will answer your questions if we can. Engage with us. We've got new videos at UCB Comedy that come out almost every single day on YouTube and Vimeo/UCB Comedy. Interact with us on social media @UCB Comedy. Check out our other podcasts on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, iTunes/UCB Comedy. And until next time, we'll see you on the internet.